Hi, welcome to the Cosa Nostra.
I'm Noah.
I'm Eddie. And today we are covering
1971.
Our namesake.
Oh, I'm sorry, 72.
72. Well, come on, man. 72s.
A lot of these movies kind of...
Francis Ford Coppola, written by Mario Puzo, our namesake, for those who haven't figured it out yet. The Godfather.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah, this is actually the earliest movie we've ever done.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really? Pretty... Yeah, because I think the furthest back we've done is Raiders, and now...
Yeah, this so is blows this, it out of the water.
Yeah, okay, wow.
So, okay, it's a gangster movie. Well, what did you think? First time watching it was...
It's kind of hard just to, like... It would be like me watching Citizen Kane. It's like you've been shoved down your throat that this thing is the greatest thing in the world. So you watch it, and... What I did, and I think it really helped, I kind of watched it separate from everything I'd ever heard of the movie. I wasn't thinking about, like, all the times they put it, like, on, like, a National Film Registry or something like that, or, like, how many times people saying it was the greatest movie in the world. I just watched it like I would any other movie, and I came out, you know, just genuinely really enjoying it. This is just... It works because of the characters and the situations and... All the set pieces, everything is very interesting, you know? It's just a very... Again, it's weird calling one of the greatest movies of all time just, like, a really good movie. But yeah, it's just a really good movie. I don't know what to say, man. Like, this is good.
This is really good,
you know? This is one of the pinnacles of just narrative features, and, you know...
I think it's interesting. I don't know whether this was, like, Al Pacino's first movie. Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
But not far off, I don't imagine. Yeah. It's quite interesting. Obviously, now he's, like, big-name guy, known for hits like Jack and Jill.
I was about to say, was it like Pigeon Duncan? Oh, my God, that's mean. That's mean. That's really mean. You can't do that. Like, no, pick another movie.
Such as, you know, Scent of a Woman.
Dick Tracy.
Dog Day Afternoon. Stuff like... You know, more recently, The Irishman.
Scarface.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Scarface. He's fair. Like, all these really iconic movies. It's kind of weird seeing him, like, looking so young and, like, not, you know, like, crazy, disheveled old guy that
and
he
not,
is
And not, you
now.
Know, selling Dunkin' Donuts. But
the Dunkachino. Oof.
Yeah.
Low point.
Yeah. Okay, we can talk about technically the main star of the movie, Marlon Brando.
I feel like it's more Pacino's movie.
Yeah, no, it is his movie. This is to a lesser extent, but it's similar to what they had with, like, Superman in 1978, where it's like, it's obviously Christopher Reeve's movie, but Marlon Brando's the person with the name first thing. Like, Marlon Brando gets top billing in this movie.
Like, known for stuff like Last Tango in Paris.
So, like, the thing with Marlon Brando...
Actually, such as, like, On the Waterfront is what he's actually known
the
for.
Thing,
but, yeah.
Yeah, like, the thing with Marlon Brando is that, like, when he was making this movie, he was, he was considered, like, unbankable, that you cannot work with this guy.
He's all... When you think about it, you know the famous, like, the fact that his bottom lip is, like, sagged down? That was him. So he made it harder for himself to speak. He also didn't learn his lines. So there'd just be some poor guy whose job is to hold up a cue card.
It was the same thing for his, like, 5 minutes of screen time as Jor-El in Superman.
Which, by the way,
Superman.
I think James Gunn putting in Bradley Cooper was a nice nod to Marlon Brando in the Superman, but kind of better.
Yeah, it's very different. No, I see. Because, like, okay, so basically, with Marlon Brando, like, what happened, like, in the 50s, he was, like, kind of, like, with James Dean, like, the top, one of those young, new Hollywood actors coming in and, like, stuff like Streetcar Named Desire. And, you know, he, like, obviously on top of the world and stuff like that. And then the 60s come in and his erratic behavior, you might say, kind of becomes more known to people. You know, it's quite interesting to see, like, parallels with this and Val Kilmer, actually, if they're both in, what's it called? That movie. The Island of Dr. Moreau. And basically, he directs a movie called Not Last Tango in Paris. He directs a movie in sometime in the 1960s, I think 1964, and it's a massive box office bomb. And basically, he is considered practically unbankable by this point. So he has had probably the biggest fall from grace an actor has had in a very long time. So coming into this movie, this was a way of him getting back into like prestigious movies again, and it obviously worked very well for him. I can't remember if he won the Academy Award for this.
Almost, if not, but I'd imagine.
Did he? I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, considering he got the role, like, there wasn't really anyone else that was really going to come in and take the role from him. Like, I'm looking at the casting notes here, and it's basically no one but him.
Yeah.
Roles like Michael Corleone and Sonny Corleone were
He was the most famous star of this movie, because everybody else was basically unknown. Ooh,
Robert Duvall, I would say, is
probably No, I think Robert Duvall was unknown before this movie as
really?
Well. Mm-hmm.
Was his stardom after?
Yes. Like,
no, because I feel like he did movies when he was younger.
Probably when he was younger, but from what I read at some point.
Because otherwise,
I mean,
I don't imagine Al Pacino or Jimmy Caan were particularly well known.
No, they weren't.
Jimmy Caan, who I first knew for. For Elf.
Yeah, like.
And knowing Elf is.
Yeah, his buddy's buddy's father. And it's like, that was cool. Like, for me, it was seeing Diane Keaton in this movie. And, like, I had only been familiar with her with, like, the Father of the Bride movie. So it was like, oh my God. I was like, that was so weird. But, like, yeah, that was really
yeah,
cool.
All
to
these
see.
People who are now, like, big stars. Just, like, this is their kind of, like, starting point.
And it's the same thing for the director, Francis Ford Coppola.
Ooh, she did Something's Gotta Give.
Oh, yeah, with Jack Nicholson. Yeah, I knew I was forgetting something. Yeah, so it was the same thing for Francis Ford Coppola. And if you looked at Francis's movies that he made before The Godfather...
Probably a little confusing.
Nothing would prepare you for him making this one, apart from his family. Like, where you look at his family and you're like, oh, yeah, this guy, he's going to direct, like, a mafia movie at, like, some point. But, okay... The first movie he directed was a Roger Corman movie called Dementia 13, which is a horror thriller released in 1963. It is, if you go on Wikipedia, the entire movie is free online, so that might tell you how much people care about it.
Oh my God, this looks awful.
He then made You're a Big Boy Now, a movie that genuinely can't be found anywhere, as far as I know. Then he directs Finian's Rainbow, this big budget, last remnant movie of the studio system, this big musical about a racist southern senator who gets turned into a black guy by a leprechaun. If you want to go watch the movie, I don't know where you could find it again.
That is awful.
That?
Sorry, this guy
sounds like a
plot. Then again, this guy directed Megalopolis.
Yeah, so not entirely a stretch.
Makes sense.
And then he directs The Rain People. And this is one of those movies, like, probably along with, like, Easy Rider and Bonnie and Clyde, that are the shift from the studio system of the 60s into the new Hollywood auteur-director-driven era of the 70s. And it's this...
James Caan in Rain People.
Yeah.
We know why he turned
and off. And Robert Duvall, okay.
Yeah, so I feel like he was raised.
Like, the budget is $750,000. This isn't exactly a big prestige, big, like, movie.
No, but I'm pretty sure that To Kill a Mockingbird came before.
No, he's not in that.
He is in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, is he? I mean, that sounds...
Yes, he is. 1962. He plays quite a major role. He's Bill Radley, guys.
Wait, actually, back up.
Yeah, To Kill a Mockingbird. Then he also did... he's in Apocalypse Now, but I think that was a couple of years later.
Yeah, he's in... THX 1138, so that's something.
Shocker.
Yeah, I did not know.
Yeah, he's in MASH. He was part of the MASH cast.
I've never seen To Kill a Mockingbird. How big is his role in that one?
Quite large, Boo Radley. I mean, he's only really seen towards the end of it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, but like, is that the kind of movie that would be, like, career, like...
Yeah, I mean, people would take notice. THX 1138... So he had a somewhat following.
Yeah, but yeah, the thing with Francis, like, he made a Roger Corman horror movie, a big budget Hollywood musical.
Oh my God.
And then he made a drama, like a serious, a down to earth drama. And, you know, that kind of, it's an odd career to have before you make The Godfather. That's how I feel about it. And like, it's the same kind of like, it's the same. It's not like he stops making interesting movies after that. Like, even after The Godfather, he goes from Apocalypse Now to like One from the Heart. Then he goes to like The Outsiders, and then he goes to like Peggy Sue Got Married, and then he goes to Bram Stoker's Dracula. Then he does Jack. Then he goes to like nearly 20 years of just making indie movies, and then we have Megalopolis, which.
Okay. I think a lot of the people in this movie, this is the only good movie they do for a while. Well, no, after the 70s, they kind of fell off. Like, Robert Duvall made a movie called Stalin, straight to TV, where he plays Stalin.
Oh, that sounds fun.
He looks like an advert for fake tan.
Wow. I mean, that could only be so bad, like.
It was straight to TV, guys. That's just
that, that's not college. That's not the mark of like, that's not the mark of death. Okay, that are good. I can't name any right now, but like,
yeah, sure, guys.
Yeah. So like,
anyway, onto the movie.
Yeah. So I really again like thoughts? it's so weird just saying this.
Like,
but
I really like the movie.
I know. I really like the score for the movie. Like,
yeah. I mean, I have that on obvious, CD. Yeah, sitting like, in my room. Like, that is amazing.
I would totally get that on CD.
So iconic.
It's iconic. Cause,
like, also, the marketing for this is like pretty amazing. When they came out, the movie posters that were in cinemas were stills of the film. Cool. I have one in my room from when the.
Oh yeah, but
came
most
out.
Movies had this.
In the '70s, yeah, but
no, like just like. Like since like the 30s, honest, probably since the 20s, and then probably stopping sometime in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, like, where you'd get still.
Yeah, yeah. What are they? Lobby cards. Yeah, they'd have.
Well, I mean, hard to say, but
yeah, it'd be so. It'd be so cool to have one of them.
I have one. Yeah, in my room.
Yeah, because like, geez, like I don't know what they do with them once they're done.
There's
like,
a website. There's a shop. Yeah, I'll plug them. Why not? Called I think it's called. To the movies or go to the movies in Marylebone in London, and they sell movie posters and lobby cards and all sorts. But that's to say that the cinematography of the film is amazing.
Yeah, it's obviously amazing.
This all feels like, you know, yeah, well done, Watson. Like, I mean, come
yeah,
on.
I know. But it's just interesting. Like, for me, it's interesting. Again, I like going back to Francis's early filmography because I really respect directors who, like, branch out and make completely different movies every time. It's incredible. You go look at Finian's Rainbow. It looks like something like The Sound of Music or like The Music Man. This big budget Hollywood movie with like, you know, kind of like artificial sets and constant dancing up and down, something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's interesting to go from that, like 4 years later, to go to this naturalistic, real movie, this proper depiction of the mafia. It's just like, wow. Like, one of the main, like, you know,
Fred Astaire is in Finian's Rainbow.
Yeah, that was his last role.
He goes into blackface in Finian's Rainbow.
No, is he the senator? I don't think so.
I mean, it looks like it.
I don't think so.
He finds a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow, apparently.
No, I don't know. Like, again, this is the most anybody's ever talked about Finian's Rainbow. So any fans of Finian's Rainbow out there, please do enjoy this because you're never going to hear anybody talk
Fred
about
Astaire
this.
Fred Astaire looks so old.
I know, poor. Well, you know, he'd been working
since
like the
Gandalf.
30s.
Jeez.
He'd been working since the 30s. So like,
Fred, where did it go? To be fair,
I think he can still dance there. I think
the most I've
seen
of Fred Astaire was my English teacher showing me a video of it. Of him.
I don't want to. I would like to go on a tangent about Fred Astaire, but we don't have
I
time.
Don't think I want to talk about Finian's Rainbow anymore.
I don't want to. I am only bringing this movie up to just show you the difference between how much this guy.
And with that, the Finian's Rainbow segment comes to a close.
Yeah, it's just to show how different it is. Okay, that's enough Finian's
Rainbow.
We've
given you your dedicated 20 minutes, Finian's Rainbow fans.
I know. I can't talk about it anymore.
Yeesh.
It's the only one of his early movies I can talk about. I'm not talking about Dementia 13 because
I don't even know what that is. It sounds like a very...
Yeah, like it's a Roger Corman movie.
It sounds
really
like mental health is not a key focus in that film.
Yeah, but like...
Yeah, so this film and the book of it was actually so realistic. People thought Mario Puzo was actually part of the mafia.
Really?
And this was his way of processing what happened. So it's heavily influenced by like Al Capone and the likes, you know, during that sort of period.
And
the seven, like, you know, all of them bosses around a table is a real thing.
Oh, I'd imagine.
There's a picture the FBI had of the major members of the mafia for each state.
Hell, if it wasn't real, I wouldn't know, because it's dealt so with such real and, like, honesty that even if it wasn't a real thing, I'd fall for it, because it is just... It's incredible. It's something I want to bring up, and it's something that goes for a lot of, you know, movies from the 70s, is that it's incredible to see, like, how so all these filmmakers kind of taking the schlockiness of the movies, like, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and turning them into something prestigious. Like, you see with George Lucas taking those schlocky sci-fi B-movie serials and turning that into Star Wars. You see Steven Spielberg taking, like, the kind of, like, the low-budget monster movie and turning that into Jaws. And you see them taking the low-budget, like, not low-budget, but just kind of, like,
awful,
campy, like, gangster movies, like Angels with Dirty Feet, Dirty Souls, Dirty Faces, you know, like something like that. Or like the original Scarface or something like that. The ones with James Cagney and Edward G. Robinson. And taking that and turning that something into actually real and, like, it's again, another something that's representative of, like, the new Hollywood era of just realism. Realism is so important in this movie, and I really just, you know, enjoy that.
I think what also kind of helps, there's part of the very strong part of it is that it's about family, right? That's kind of the key theme around it.
Yeah.
And that it was kind of a family that made this movie. The soundtrack is by Carmine Coppola, who is the...
Which you don't see that a lot, you know, just like he's having the whole family just...
Is he the uncle?
Huh?
The uncle too, or...
No.
The father?
I wouldn't think he's actually in the movie.
His brother was... he's the father of... Francis's dad made the soundtrack. He also made the soundtrack for Part 2, Part 3, Apocalypse Now, The Outsiders, The Black Stallion. He won Academy Award for the Best Original Score, I think, for this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Golden Globe Award for Best Original Score, I think, also for this movie. BAFTA Award for Best Original Music and the Grammy Award for Best Soundtrack.
Mm.
So this guy, like...
Yeah.
He knows his stuff.
It's something that's so interesting with, like... You know, without Francis, like, how many, like big actors wouldn't have this stuff? Like, look at, like, Nicolas Cage or something. I think Nicolas Cage is, like,
his... Kal-El Coppola.
Which is, like...
Is that actually his name?
No, that is his name.
On Wikipedia, that's linked his name as Kal-El Coppola.
Which, okay, I don't really want to get it. But, like, you know,
Did you guys know Connie, the sister, is... Francis Ford Coppola's sister.
Really?
Yeah, that makes sense. She's in we can't really talk about the second movie. We'll get her onto it at some point. Yeah. But, like, she's a bit annoying in the second movie.
But, it's incredible to see, like, that, like, how, without him, he wouldn't have got his start. And, like, how many movies, like, he has made, like, Francis has made that just, like, gave him so many people, like, a start. Like, Robert Duvall and, like, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. It is Peggy Sue Got Married, where, like, that introduces Nicolas Cage and Jim Carrey.
Yeah,
it's like, he's done so much.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, Heat and all of this stuff.
And as much as...
Goodfellas and all that stuff.
As much as I...
exist
I know, and, you know, look at, like, American Graffiti, you know. He produced American Graffiti for George Lucas, and without that, I don't think people would have given George Lucas the goodwill to make Star Wars or something like that. It's just... It really is incredible. And
he's, the godfather of film. I don't think it's that...
Yeah, yeah. And as much as I like to make fun of him and, like, Megalopolis, like,
Megalopolis,
he's done a lot.
Jesus.
I know, it's funny to make...
Holy bomb.
It's funny to make... I haven't seen the Mega Doc. It's like, you know, disaster movie, definitely. I would like to see, like...
If you ever have a sad day, guys, read the reviews for Megalopolis.
Yeah, that just... It just... No, you want a sad day, look at the budget for Megalopolis and look how much it made. Movies in my life... I've never really seen a movie in my lifetime that's just tanked so hard as that. I can't really remember, but... Suffice to say, people did not show up to that one. But, it's just...
Have you seen... He's got his own Instagram account. Good old... not Instagram, his own Letterboxd account.
Nice.
Good old, you know, Francis Ford Coppola still out there supporting film. Yeah. He reviews his own movie, bless him, sweetheart. How old is he now? He's like
81,
Yeah, he reviews his own movie. He goes,
86.
I made this movie and I think I did a good job. And the rest of the reviews are, personal attack on Coppola's soul.
Did he? Because I know that, like, actors and directors don't tend to actually put, like, star ratings.
No, he just put a 5-star and he goes,
I made this movie
and I think I did a good job. And
God, bless us up, because I think Megalopolis was re-released into cinemas, like, a month ago? which, again, it probably had the same effect as them releasing Morbius in the cinemas again. I don't know,
Morbius,
man.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Like, oh, Jared. He's got such a good... The band, it looks like I'd like the band. It looks like I would like that. But no, I can't. Because he's so off. The only movie I've seen him where he's good is Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
He's actually good in that. Everything else, oh my God.
His personal life.
His personal life's even worse. The bleached looks awful.
Yeah. But like, so the whole family aspect, like how everybody pitches in and the Coppola family into this one, it's cool.
And post-movie,
they
are still kind of like...
They do.
A film family. They will work together.
I'm pretty sure...
Al Pacino and De Niro have so many movies together. Post The Godfather 2, they work...
Really? No, I'm pretty sure it's just Heat.
No, they have a couple, I think.
Really?
Or they produce each other's movies.
Is it 48 Hours or
Bone-In
or something?
48 Hours, and then Gangs of... Once Upon a Time in New York, no?
Irishman,
right.
He did something with New York, no? Gangs of New York, maybe?
No, not
Gangs of New York.
Scorsese direct. No, did he?
No, there was Once Upon a Time in New York. One of them was in that. And Dog Day Afternoon is Pacino and John Canzale, who's also in this movie. So all of them work together more than once or twice.
And you still see like the Coppola family like kind of work together. Again, it's weird to call 1992 recent history because that is more than 30 years ago now, goddamn. But like... Even kind of recently, if you're talking about
Bronx, where I should have been 1972, I should have been in the cinema. I don't know where I was, but like, I should have been there.
If you can look at Bram Stoker's Dracula, where I think Francis Coppola's nephew did the matte paintings and like he did the art direction for that movie as well. And I think he did win an Oscar for that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember for sure.
I mean, they're so talented.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, it is true. Okay.
Diane Keaton, is she related to...
If you say Michael Keaton, I swear to God, man.
Is she?
No, of course not. That's what I thought, but it's not true. No! Keaton is a very popular surname, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Keaton is just her mom's name.
Yes. Okay.
Oops. Right, jeez, don't... Wow. Okay, back to the actual movie.
Yeah, so...
Should we just get the, like, obviously, things out of the way?
Yeah, I'm
performances.
I'm genuinely struggling for things to say, because, like, what
performances,
do you want
to say? Amazing.
It's great to see this. Again, I really should have watched this movie all in one go instead of, like, over the course of a week. But, like, if I watched it all in one go, it would have been, like... Actually, no, it was cool to see over the week, because it was more like you got to see the slow burn of Al Pacino change.
Yes, know, like, that is that is fascinating.
Yeah, that is
from against his family to ruthless, worse than his dad. Mafia. Mm-hmm. That last 5 minutes where they just kill every other mafia boss.
While
we talked about smash cuts last time, while contrasted through smash cuts with his son's christening, and then when he leaves the christening, he's like. He's just like, yeah, I killed them all.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, so like... Again, I'm struggling for things to say because it's like... It's just like, this is it. This is it, man. This is just... this is just like the second hard... Unless for like Citizen Kane, this would probably be like the hardest movie to like ever review because it's like...
It's a obviously,
goddamn Godfather.
Like, obviously the cinematography is amazing.
Let's talk about the thing in the debate in Italy then. Like,
that is... I think that's one of the nicest looking things I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it makes it look like...
It reminds me a lot of Jean de Florette, for those who have seen that.
It's the French.
It's a French movie, about... And it's got the same kind of like cool rural... Also the bodyguards he has. Mm. It was a cool little like segment. I think revisiting it in the second movie when they go to kill... Something or other was much more interesting, in my opinion, for an Italian segment. But, you know, the scene with the car bomb and...
That really just, like...
That whole, like throwaway marriage thing, all of the cool... I just think it was a cool exploration of Italian culture on a screen that probably hadn't done that a lot before.
Yeah.
I don't want to say definitely because I'm probably uninformed.
No, you're probably right.
But
again,
somewhat probably.
No, because...
And the thing where, he falls in love and they're like, you'll feel it, it's like lightning. Like, that's a cool little development section watching him become a mafia boss. by going back to his roots. Like, that was a cool little segment. Immediately then faced by going back to America, but...
Yeah. I'm wondering, like, do you think this movie... And it's interesting to, like, wonder these kind of things. Like, for example, like, what if Star Wars came out, like, last year or, like, this year? What if The Godfather came out this year? Do you think it will have the same effect?
It would, then? Yeah. I think it would. It's one of those movies where it's just so well done. Even if it did not have... the great, like, visuals and stuff that the movies... this movie with the same camera quality, same, like, everything, the same slightly weird blood imagery and, like, slightly, or like, odd props and stuff. Even if it came out right now, as it is, a 70s movie now, it would still do really well, I think. Maybe it'd be a bit more of an indie movie, but...
Might be too slow-paced for people.
Yeah. I mean, like, again... I don't want to say I'm a guy with a low attention span, but I do like my movies. That's like constantly moving. But that wasn't really a problem here. I was still enjoying what was happening. And like every so often you had like genuinely like big, you know, like interesting set pieces happening. So it's not like nothing is happening. This isn't like 12 Angry Men where like you got a bunch of people sitting in a boardroom or something like that. Like stuff is happening, you know. And
My only complaint about this movie, having read the book, I think it misses out on a lot that I'd like to see on the screen somehow.
Yeah, but you kind of like
it's so well done, and I wouldn't add anything to it. But I'd like to see the story about the singer, what's his name, based on Frank Sinatra. I can't remember his name. What's his name?
Oh, for God's sake.
It's Johnny Fontaine. There's a cool like little sub story about him failing as an actor. Then there's also a whole story about Lucy Mancini, where she like goes through this whole like self-improvement thing without the mafia, which is like really interesting, and I could see as like an off-guard.
But like the thing is like, and this is the thing that goes for every movie that's been adapted from a novel, you can't expect everything to be in the book, you know? Everything in the book to be in the movie, you know? That's the kind of thing that kind of gets me riled up but from, like, serious Harry Potter fans. Oh, why is this not in the book? I'm like, okay, it is a movie. You can't expect everything to be in it and stuff. That goes for, like, biopics as well.
Yeah, but in terms of what they cut, they did it really well.
Yeah, you know, you just
the stuff that it lacks doesn't change the story. I think that's where a lot of movies that were books, like The Shining, just cut stuff and it lacks a lot. As in this one, like, it doesn't lack anything. It's well made. There's just this cool, like, extra so that when you read the book, it's still like...
Mm.
That being said, famously, the guy who wrote the book wrote the screenplay. So that's why it feels so authentic to the book. Mario Puzo wrote both. Famously, before he was about to write the script for the second one, bought a screenplay book to get a bit better because he'd never done it before. This was the first one he wrote. And it said, study the Godfather script. And he basically just threw the book away because he knew that he's like perfect his all. He'd gone on, we were saying before we did this, he'd done The Godfather 2, The Godfather 3 as well, not much before he died. He died in 94, I think, and it came out in 90. He co-wrote the Superman 1 and 2. Wow.
1 and 2. I'm not sure about 2, but yeah, 1. I haven't checked 2. Honestly. But from what I'm reading here, that Godfather was... Again, everybody was like, oh, Jaws is the first blockbuster. And it's like, from what I'm reading here, The Godfather was the first blockbuster. So take that as you will. I think Jaws was just like a much bigger movie and a much easier one for general audiences to digest. But it was the highest grossing movie of 1972. Number one in the United States. And it was the first movie to gross... over $100 million, which today that doesn't sound like that much, but yeah. But by some accounts, apparently that is a record that belongs to The Sound of Music. I don't really know, but and obviously it received critical acclaim.
Well, clearly.
Yeah. 11 Oscar nominations. But for some reason, the original dramatic score, which is just a best original score.
Was it not for the second one? Because it had too much of the first movie score in it that it was banned from getting the score. Same for Dune 2, where Dune 2 had too much of the original score from the first
movie.
That
might be true for the second one. But here it says the first one was also revoked.
Yeah, because it had... I think the guy... Yeah, I think he'd used it in another movie, or it was inspired by another Italian theme that they had gotten the rights to use.
Yeah,
and they had to win. No, actually, I think they won in the second one, but they didn't win the first one because the second one had only the, I mean, the iconic Godfather theme, and the rest had been made
famously. Sure. And I'd imagine if you've probably seen this or at least heard of this online, Marlon Brando boycotted the Oscars.
Yes, he got a Native American actress to come for him. Which, you know what?
You really gotta respect that. Like, he wasn't a perfect guy, but like...
For a horrible person,
he's not even a horrible person.
Guys, Last Tango in Paris was awful.
Yeah.
Not even the movie, the shooting experience was awful.
Yeah, but like...
Feel free to take a look into that when you get a minute. You gotta respect him for that.
I don't know how many times, like... actors have just declined like getting the Oscar. The only other time I've seen is like from George C. Scott.
Yeah, Last Tango in Paris.
But like, yeah, he says based on the objection to the depiction of American Indians by Hollywood and television. I don't know what brought that up particularly. Like what, if there was an event or that was just something he believed in, I don't know. But like, yeah, that's just like a really interesting anecdote, and you can find like the video online of the Native American actress, I think, accepting the award instead of him. So you know, for you know this old guy from like the 1970s, you know, that is really you know just like forward thinking, you know,
a bit sketchy.
Yeah, you know, definitely doing better than John Wayne.
That being said, I'm realizing that when we were talking about Full Metal Jacket, we didn't bring up, is that you, John Wayne? Is it, am I me? The like really famous line, which I really didn't understand the meaning, but apparently it's supposed to mean that he's like asking John Wayne to like prove that he's still alive, which is funny because, you know, like John Wayne's not remotely there.
Wait, what?
It's a really weird throwaway gag.
He keeps doing a John Wayne impression.
Who does?
The Joker.
Joker.
It's that like, sort of like, because John Wayne has this sort of slow character way of talking.
Is that your Pell Grant? Yeah. Oh, yeah, like that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Okay. Okay. Okay, so this movie was on like the AFI's like top 100 movies, number 3. It was on top 100 movie quotes number 2 on that four. I'm going to make him an offer.
We'll make him an offer you can't refuse.
Although I think the second movie uses it almost better. Whereas like a throwback.
Yeah. Well, why am I saying yes? I've never even seen the goddamn movie. Okay. Well, in the 10th anniversary edition of the top 100 movies from AFI, it is now number 2 behind Citizen Kane. So... Citizen Kane's on BBC iPlayer, so I better go watch that one next.
It's weird that IMDb just glazes Shawshank Redemption so hard.
Letterboxd does that as well.
No one seems to put it that high. Like, Letterboxd and IMDb only, and every other, like, you know, like, business company does not put it high.
Okay, so...
I thought it was pretty good.
Wait, guys.
I don't know if it's best movie of all time.
Wait, this is something really weird. Apparently, like, the quote, "In that case, I will make you an offer no one can refuse," actually, it's a quote that John Wayne used in Riders of Destiny. Like,
is John
I've
Wayne
made
like...
Denton an offer he can't refuse, Pelgrim. Yeah, so I don't know if that's like directly taken from it.
John Wayne.
So apparently gangsters reportedly responded very enthusiastically towards the movie. Yeah. So somebody called Salvatore Sammy the Bull Gravano, a former underboss from the Gambino crime family.
I'm sorry, but the names of the people who are in this movie are like...
So
like
Italian, oh my God.
Coppola, the music guy, is called Carmine. I don't know if it's just because I'm a Batman fan, but Carmine Falcone, that's the most like underground name I've ever heard. Carmine Coppola. Like, it's just some really like, some mafia-looking names there.
Oh my God.
Also, the scene with Carlo Rizzi where she's calling and she's like crying on the phone, and Sonny like slams the phone down, runs out, and he's like, you ever touched my sister? Oh, yeah, he like smashes a bin over his
head. Oh yeah, I was actually kind of laughing because he just gets the lid of the bin and goes that on his face.
And the guy, Carlo's just like holding on desperately, trying to not get like knocked out. And all the
and kids, he's biting his finger.
All the kids in the yard are like cheering and like throwing water. And honestly, like, as an older brother,
I swear that's the same street from Do the Right Thing. I don't know. It's New York, but it's a scene in Brooklyn, and I just feel it is. Guys, I don't want to, I don't know why I'm ending on this, but like, I finally get the joke in the Simpsons episode Lisa's Pony, where she wakes up and there's a pony in her bed. They shoot that thing the exact way they do in The Godfather. They use the exact same music, and until right now, I have never understood it. Thank you.
Anyway, on that note, what are we giving it? 5?
Five.
If you haven't seen this, I don't really know how you haven't.
I don't really know. It's on BBC.
On BBC iPlayer.
No, if you live in the UK, because you actually can't watch it, you can't go on BBC iPlayer unless you're in the UK. But if you go on it in there before 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, you can watch it for free.
If not, your local charity shop will have the DVD.
I really doubt it will, because they're not selling that thing for like 10 minutes.
Anyway, okay. Thank you very much. I've been Eddie.
I've been Noah.
Please come back next week.
Yeah, for something. I don't know. I'm gonna have to choose, and I don't know.
I think the week after I'm doing mid-90s maybe. Yeah. So if you haven't seen that,
watch it.
Yeah, A24.
Yeah. Okay.